Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, and it is game day. It is the Cleveland Guardians against the Tampa Bay Rays, a 1-10 first pitch. And I'll tell you what, it's a jam-packed house. I've got my number one draft pick finally back, settled in to Tampa Bay, St. Pete, and that's Ben Botham. He's across from me. Welcome back, youngster.
It's great to be back. I always love being here at Ferg.
Well, it's great to have you back. I needed you. Yeah. I fumble, stumble, and bumble by myself. We're brought to you each and every Saturday morning by Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, serving Champa Bay for 29 years. And I like to say we're just a driver away from the front of the ticket window. What is the reason for this game? I'm looking.
Today is the Brett Phillips basketball throwback jersey.
I thought that's what it was.
Are you kidding me, Mike? I'm surprised you're not over there right now trying to get yourself a jersey.
Hey, I love the success story and enthusiasm of that young guy, but my old carcass would rather be here talking baseball. We've got a jam-packed, wonderful show. We're going to start out with Rick Vaughn in this book, 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, how the game helped shape the city, and it sure helped shape Mark Ferguson's life 29 years ago when he opened. He likes to say he opened up when the beer was warm and the food was cold, and he held on, and then all of a sudden an announcement is made that the Tampa Bay Devil Rays were coming through town. You can hear us, of course, on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. Our affiliates, our flagship is WTAN 106.1 FM, AM 1340, that's Clearwater, St. Pete, Tampa, WZHR 104.3, AM 1350, and Zephyr Hills and WZHR 102.3 FM and AM 1400. And we're streaming live on RadioSt.Pete.com, our partner. We got a lot of breaking news in September. We're launching The Stream. And The Stream is going to be our sports connection for Champa Bay and across the USA. Join The Stream team. You like it?
Oh, yeah. That sounds great. I'm very excited for it. I'm sure all of our fans would love to tune in.
All right. Here's the show we've got. First of all, we're going to talk to inappropriate to have him on, you know, on a Rays game day. We'll talk to Rick right out of the chute. Then I went over to the J.C. Newman Cigar Factory on Thursday night with Barry Smith. We were talking about Rick Barry. His woman went to school with Mark. And we're going to, we went over there for the officials and the coaches meeting. And we're going to have the head of the officials, Greg Kaiser, on about 12:30. And then we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show, some more high school. We'll talk to the head of the Florida Coaches Athletic Union, and that is Shelton Cruz and Matt Hollick. Have you been on when we talked to him from Hitter's Garage?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, he was live at the MLB All-Star Week. So another baseball conversation that I'll have you carry. I'll go in the restroom, walk around, and probably help wipe off tables for Mark. But why don't we go over, you ready to do the MLB standings on the Fergs from the front row, brought to you by Coors Light. And been an interesting week for Rays fans, holding on by the seat of our pants right now with that, staying in the wild card race. With 17 people on the IL, though, fans need to be realistic, which never happens, but it's amazing that they are where they are.
Exactly, especially with so many of their guys, like you said, so many guys on the IL, and a lot of guys really not hitting their weight, unfortunately. But we do have the Yankees leading off the AL East. They're still 68-33 with a 5-5 in the last 10 games. We had the Blue Jays who snuck past us here. They're 55-45. The Rays 53-47. The Orioles 51-49. And the Red Sox, who have really been just collapsing, 50-51. Did you see the Inside the Park Grand Slam last week?
Oh, yeah.
Insane watching that play. Next, we have the AL Central with the Twins at the head of it, 52 wins, 47 losses, and the Guardians right behind them, 51 wins, 48 losses. The AL West led by the Astros, 66-35. Moving over into the National League, we have the Mets at the top of the NL East, 62 wins, 37 losses. with the Braves not too far behind, 60 wins, 41 losses. Then NL Central with the Brewers at the top, 56 wins, 44 losses. Then NL West with the Dodgers still at the head with 67 wins and 32 losses.
And you weren't here last week. You're up moving back down here. But I want to do another shout-out to Taden Hall, Toby Hall's son, who was picked 282nd by the Brew Crew. You mentioned the Milwaukee Brewers. And I just think it's a great story. He's a catcher like his father was for the Chicago White Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays. And I just think that's a great story of family success. And Toby never pushed his son. In fact, he said he almost discouraged him because he didn't want him to have, you know, the pressure of, you know, having a father that's a major league player and a lot of expectations by people, but well-grounded and successful and a great story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but we've seen a lot of great stuff happening recently. We have the Hall of Fame inductions that just happened with an estimated crowd of over 35,000 fans at the 73rd Annual Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Guys like Bud Fowler, Gil Hodges, Jim Catt, Minnie Minoso, Tony Oliva, Buck O'Neill.
Hey, Tony Oliva.
Oliva.
Excuse You're my historian. It's not Olivia. That's Olivia Newton-John, dude.
Whoops. But I'm very excited for Buck O'Neill finally getting in. You know, his Negro League stats finally being recognized.
I told you, you need to get to Kansas City. You want to see something cool? Get over to Kansas City because you assisted with the Savannah
Negro League history
exactly,
there.
Exactly, and did a superb job. And you need to take those credentials. Go to Kansas City. I'll line you up with some people.
Oh, yeah, we were just talking right before the show about some of the Negro League stuff going on there. Bob Kendrick, who's very excited about Buck O'Neill finally getting in. And Buck O'Neill was just a treasure to the game and an absolutely amazing man. Wonderful stories. And what was it, I don't know if it was 10 years ago or so, but he led the whole crowd in singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And that's one of the more spectacular moments in his career, I'd like to say.
Well, I can assure you this, as I mentioned, I work for the Cubs organization, and the most iconic was the late great Harry Carey, and you've only heard my story 1,000 times. I crashed his funeral and got to know him and Ronnie, but I'm sure that that his rendition was a lot crisper, pure, didn't have any saliva flying, and but it wasn't as comical. And they still play the Cubs games at Wrigley. They still play Harry's rendition, and they have Harry up there. I was at Harry Carey's in December visiting my daughter, and his wife is still alive, Dutchie. She's 91 years young. She drives to Harry Carey's downtown every day. She drinks two vodkas, and... Because she was right there alongside Harry, running up and down Rush Street. He and Ronnie Santo and the boys, Steve Stone, prior to his exit. And they said she greets everybody, gets in her car, and goes home. Now, that's fabulous. All right. Well, we're fortunate to have this gentleman join us, especially on a game day down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. And he is Rick Vaughn. And storied career in communications. Mark gave me a quick bio, and I've been reading your book, but I didn't dive into your bio completely. But Orioles organization, the Commanders now, is that what I got to call them?
Yeah.
Well, if I slip with Redskins and Indians, I'm from Northwest Iowa. I'm from Sioux City, Iowa. Lakota native, and my grandkids, here's my excuse, my grandkids and my daughter-in-law are native. So... And they don't think there's a problem. And I played for the Morningside College Chiefs, who are now the Mustangs. So it's a thorn in my side. But anyway, so those are your stops. And then you come here across the street and a superb career. And you're working closely with Joe Madden now. But did you ever think you'd be an author? Because this is very impressive. 100 years of baseball on St. Petersburg waterfront, how the game helped shape a city. And this tells it all. And he's Rick Vaughn, and I appreciate you taking time to come down.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here. A beautiful day. A lot of Rays fans here. No, I didn't think I would ever write a book. And I really didn't intend to write a book when I started that project. I was really just trying to do some research that I wanted to give to the city to try to get them to memorialize that area down there at Al Lang more than they have. It's pretty much neglected. It's a soccer field now, which I get. I'm a Rowdies fan. I like what they're doing down there. But there's no baseball really to speak of. Al Lang's name is not even visible in the stadium anymore. So I was really just doing some research that I wanted to present to the city to make them aware that, you know what happened down there? 193 Hall of Famers played there. So as I was doing the research, I was like, whoa, this is some pretty good stuff. And the more I did, the more I realized I might have a book. I didn't think I had the energy to do it, but my wife really encouraged me, and Tim Kirchen, who wrote the foreword, he encouraged me to do it, and so I finally...
Not bad company having Tim Kirchen write the foreword. Congratulations on that endorsement.
I tell everybody
as well.
It might be one of those books where the foreword's the best part, but I found a publisher, Arcadia Publishing. They were great, and here it is. It's out. No, I never expected to write a book.
Now, when you're talking about memorializing the incredible tradition and history of baseball in St. Pete, is it kind of, do you envision what's over in Ybor City? Where they've got the home and the museum over there. Is that kind of something you'd like to see happen?
It doesn't have to be anywhere near that involved. If you go over to Clearwater, Jack Russell Stadium, where the Phillies played for roughly 40 years, they have like a monument park outside. It's really cool with all of the Phillies Hall of Famers who played there, a lot of neat notes and things. And then if you go to Orlando, Tinker Field, which was dated back to the 20s and I think finally got demolished in the 80s or 90s, and it's gone. But they have a really cool plaza over there. You walk around that plaza. It's like a little outdoor museum. It's got everything commemorated, and it'll take you 25 minutes to go through it, and it's only a plot of land that's probably 100 square feet, and it's really, really well done. I think something like that is appropriate. That's not a lot. We're not really talking about a lot.
He's Rick Vaughn, and we're talking about his publication, 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, How the Game Helps Shape a City. And one of the things, Rick, and I'm an old man, 66 just about, and you look back, I love history, and it's great to have a young man like Ben Botham who respects it. I don't think there's enough respect for history, and people need to look back at it and have an appreciation. We're in a, what can you do for me last second society, unfortunately. And I sound like a grumpy old man, but it's the reality of it. And these people, this generation that are minimizing it, they're going to one day wonder, why didn't we do that? Because you didn't really give a damn about history. You were going so fast. And I could read books like that all day long. And I applaud you, but more so your wife for driving you. But how much time did it take?
Yeah, it was...
How long? How many years?
I actually did it in about 10 months. It's pretty specific history. We're talking about St. Petersburg, and really we're talking about that plot of land that Al Lang and Waterfront Park occupied for since 1922. So it was about a 10-month project, and I was able to devote some pretty good time every day to it, and it was like a labor of love. I loved going through all of it and discovering things that I didn't know, which I probably should have known. I was the PR director for the Orioles. We trained there for 3 years. I was PR director for the Rays. We trained there for 10 years, and I knew a little bit, scratched the surface, but I didn't have any idea of really how significant not only what took place there and how many Hall of Famers played there, but how influential baseball was on the growth of the city starting, really in the 20s.
So do you talk about any other ball fields in the book? Because I remember we were talking before the show about, what was it, the one with the big water tower?
Yes, I mentioned that briefly in there. I really tried to focus on the waterfront there. The ballpark you're thinking of, Huggins Stengel, does play a role in it because the Yankees came here in 1925, and they would not have come had the city not built a training field for them, and that's the field you're talking about, which is Huggins Stengel Field today. So that was really instrumental in getting the Yankees here. They weren't coming unless they could get a separate practice field. So, and Ben, let me just say, it's good to meet you. And what you were saying, Mike, it's nice to meet somebody on the younger side that does have an appreciation for history.
Well, and he's my baseball crutch, and I appreciate that. And I'm just amazed at what an old soul he is diving into the history of it. Okay, so what years were you with the Baltimore Orioles?
I was with the Orioles from 84 through opening day 94. It was pretty dry in terms of wins. We didn't go to postseason. But it was still a great time to be there because it was sort of the end of the mom-and-pop operation. The Orioles had always been that way, and I was there for the last few years of that before it became more of a corporation. And more importantly, I was there for the closing of Memorial Stadium and the opening of Camden Yards.
How cool was that?
It was, I tell you what, 30 years, maybe the best day I ever had was the closing of Memorial Stadium in 1991 because we didn't tell anybody what we were doing for the last game, but we brought back like 150 former Orioles. And we
Frank Robinson, all the boys.
Everybody came.
All the boys.
And we,
Brooks.
We just sort of, when the game ended, the final game ended, we lost to the Tigers that day 6-3. We just started playing the music from Field of Dreams. And here we go. Here comes Brooks Robinson out of the dugout. Here comes Frank Robinson out of the dugout.
How Jim cool Brown. Was that?
Without any introductions. They just appeared. And it was almost like a dream.
Surreal.
Thing. And we had debated back and forth. It took us like a year and a half to do this, put it together. But we had debated on whether we should announce the players as they went out. And then at the end, we were like, no, we don't need to do that. They know who these guys are. It's going to be more of a dream.
Icons,
if we
Hall
don't.
Of Famers.
Yeah, so... And we ended up with like 100, and I said, I think it was 125, 150 players back there. And at one point, I was in the tunnel between the dugout and the clubhouse and getting our players, our current players ready to go out and our former players going, having them, it was kind of in charge of that. And I didn't hear anything out in the stadium. And I was like, oh my God, maybe they don't get it. And then I poked my head out of the dugout and I looked around and there were 50,000 people there crying.
Not a dry eye
Unbelievable.
In the spot.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just got goosebumps.
It was such a great day.
Hey, Costner stole your idea. You guys should have got some royalties for that. I'm from Iowa, so I have an affinity for Field of Dreams and been to Dyersville many, many times. I didn't get there last year. But anyway, what a great... But Camden Yards, I've been there on a couple of occasions. I love that park.
I'm biased because I was there, but I still think it's the best park. And really, it was a landmark situation because it was the first of the retro parks, and everybody went that route for a long time. And I'll never forget, we played the Mets there on Saturday, and then we opened the season against the Indians on Monday. And on Saturday, that was the first time the players got to see it. We came back from spring training, and Cal Jr. was like, I can't believe this is the first game ever played in this ballpark. And it was probably the best compliment that we could have because we wanted it to be an old-fashioned retro ballpark. We wanted the exterior of the ballpark to look like any other building in downtown Baltimore. It fit in with the fabric
of the
city. And
it does. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I haven't been there, but I've heard wonderful things about it. It's a great ballpark.
Well, it was all Janet Marie Smith, who's like a legendary baseball architect. She's the greatest, and she was responsible for that. Larry Lucchino was our team president. He was responsible for it. They were very, very, very certain what they wanted. They had the vision, and no one else had that vision until that point. And so we all saw it develop. We saw the models. We saw it, and we all knew it was going to be awesome. So it was so much fun to be involved in that whole project, and it's another great moment for me. And then we hosted the All-Star Game the following year there. So that run of 91, 92, 93 was maybe the three best years I ever had in baseball.
And I may or may not had about 20 adult beverages at some time at Boog's, my favorite.
You know what was awesome about that? My office was in the warehouse, and I was on the second floor, and just down below me was Boog's Barbecue. And about 3 o'clock every day before a night game, they would start those grills, and I could smell the lighter fluid if I had my windows open. And it was like, oh my gosh, does it get any better than this? Your office is in right field at Camden Yards. You're smelling barbecue getting fired up on the grill, and it was such an unbelievable time for me.
We're talking to Rick Vaughn. Of course, he is the author of 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, How the Game Helps Shape a City, and great forward by Tim in it, too.
Yeah, Timmy was our beat writer with the Baltimore Sun when I was the PR director there, and we really developed quite a close friendship. He ended up living two doors down from us, and so not only was I seeing him every day at the park and on the road, I was seeing him on the off-season every day, and we developed a very strong friendship, and I have so much respect for Timmy because I don't know anybody that loves baseball like him.
Let's fast forward then to your trip down south to the Tampa Bay Rays. What year was that?
I was hired in 96. We got the team in 95. I was brought on board in 96, and we didn't start playing games until 1998. Vince Namoli was the owner of the team, and he hired me. And so we had about a year and a half to get ready to get things going. And it was a very, 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 you know, as you would imagine, hectic time. To try to put a team together and get it on the field and be ready to go.
Was that the biggest challenge probably you had in your career?
I probably was. You know, you know, there's that divide between Tampa and St. Pete that we tried to overcome. It was at that time. It's not as much now, but it was a football town, and even the media kind of used a lot of phrases when they would interview our players and our manager. They were more football than they were baseball, and we had to always correct them. Hey, this isn't football, this is baseball. We went through a lot of players early on. It was hard to find an identity, as an expansion team. And let's face it, we finished our first 10 years, we finished last 9 times, and then we had the one breakthrough year where we finished next to last.
Well, I remember coming down. My mother's been down here since 1999, and I remember taking the boys down to the park for a spring game, and that's when you played spring ball right here. I don't know if you were even alive then, but anyway, you weren't.
No.
But you had Fred McGriff, Canseco. You had one more big bat. Who was that?
Greg Vaughn,
and it was kind of their swan songs in their career. But it was a draw. It was an attraction, wasn't it?
It was. We billed it as the hit show. Unfortunately, the three of them. Well, it wasn't as much that as it was. I think there were only out of 162 games. I think the three of them were in the lineup together like less than a third of the season because of injuries. So it didn't really take off, and we certainly didn't take off.
But it was a great billboard to start the season for ticket sales.
It was. Yeah, it was.
So through that period, when did you? When did you wind your career down then?
My last year with the Rays was 2016. So I was there through some really great times. 2008 was phenomenal. 2011 was awesome. 2013 were all great times to be there. And I left the Rays, and now I work for Joe Madden's charitable foundation, and I have for about the last 5 years. Respect 90 Foundation is what it's called.
Yeah, Mark had mentioned that, and that's got to be a lot of fun. We in Des Moines, Iowa, we became, I did radio up there, and we became Tampa Bay Rays fans because of our relationship with Jeremy Hellickson, American League Rookie of the Year, Hoover High School, and great family. His dad, in fact, his dad's probably listening right now, Steve. I texted the family that you were going to be on. And Grandpa Bob, Steve, and then Jeremy moved back to Des Moines. He's just a laid-back kid, you know that.
Oh, we love Helly. Yeah. Nothing bothered Helly.
Jeremy... play softball with his old high school and grade school buddies now. And the first time he did it was a charity event. This is a great story. And he had his head down in the dugout. Nobody knew it, you know. And all of a sudden he gets up to the plate and these guys in the opposing team. There's Jeremy Hellickson. He jacks one out of the park. And like, this is BS. Hellickson's not playing. But he gives back to the community and is a great young
really,
man.
Really enjoyed getting to work with him. And he won some big games for us, too. You know, he was a good pitcher for us for a while. And it was sometimes hard to – you had to nudge him to make sure he was still breathing once in a while. But he's
emotionless.
But that's what made him good. You know, he didn't get caught up in the moment. You know, he was always focused, and that's why he was such a good pitcher.
That's kind of his family's MO, you know. Never braggatory about Jeremy. Proud of him.
Yeah, I met his dad. I met Steve and spent some time with them at the ballpark. And just good people. He was a really good person to be involved with.
Yeah, so there was a lot of people pulling for the Rays back then. Through your travels, you may have run into a good friend of mine that worked for me initially at the Iowa Cubs, Jeff Lance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, know Jeff very well.
Yeah, he got a nice promotion.
And he did.
Keeps big time in me. He's so busy now with Major League Baseball and communications that he won't come on here. He goes, man, I got all these golf passes for him. Listen, Lancey, I'm incentivizing your ass. Come on and be on the air. He goes, dude, you don't realize. You know, then he sends me pictures from the MLB All-Star game. I go, I don't want to see him. He won't come on the air.
I was able to snag a lunch with him in March, and he is really busy.
I know that.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of conversations about the Hawkeyes off season.
Yeah.
Between he and I. So I know this is a tough question. You just told us the most challenging period was in Baltimore. Probably a heck of a challenge when in 1996 as well. But what was your fondest memory in your career, or one of them?
At the Rays?
Either organization.
Well, I mean...
And not the Commanders. We're talking baseball.
No, I didn't have... We weren't very good when I was with the Commanders. Norv Turner, his first 2 years as head coach, we really struggled. We did not win a lot of games. But, you know, I think, again, going back to those 3 years in a row in Baltimore, the closing of the stadium, the opening of Camden Yards, the All-Star game was really... really phenomenal. You know, getting to go to Japan with the All-Star team. I was the PR director for the All-Star Tour in Japan in 2002. That was awesome. And over there, you get to sit in the dugout during the game. So,
you sit in the dugout?
Yeah, well, because Japan over there, they do TV interviews during the game. So if somebody hits a home run, they have a little studio right behind the dugout. And if there's less than two outs, we get them into the little studio there for 30 seconds, and they talk about the home run they hit. So as the PR guy, I had to be the guy that would corral those guys and get them into the studio, in that little studio to do it. But that was an unbelievable trip. We were treated it was really good because baseball, the All-Star team, it was like traveling with a rock band. I mean, everywhere we went, everything was sold out. We played in about six different cities over there, and everywhere we went, it was the people were lined up. When we left to go home, our last game was at the Tokyo Dome, and we took the bus to the airport. The fans lined the street for probably 2 miles. Just people standing on the corner waving at our bus.
Like a ticker tape parade out of town.
It was great. All our players were taking videos of it. And it was just, it was really a great experience. That was phenomenal. I've been so lucky to be around. I mean, winning in 08 had to be, you know, that was the first time in, 20-some years that I had ever been to the postseason. So that was, you know, beating the Red Sox here, David Price coming in and getting those outs in the ninth inning and going to the World Series, you know. That was amazing. You know, I've never been involved in it. I had been in baseball for 20-some years, and I'd never gone to the postseason. So it was, we never slept. I mean, we were working the entire time.
Didn't mind it.
And your adrenaline just carried you, and you didn't have any problem with it. You know, you loved it. You wanted to be there. You wanted to be a part of it. I mean, that's what's great about baseball and really working in any of the pro sports. It's pretty rewarding when you work at a place that people care a lot about. You know, fans care a lot about that. And so it's a great experience. I was so fortunate to have been able to do it for 30 years. I can't tell you how lucky I've been in my life.
Well, I wouldn't call it luck because obviously you're in demand. It's commitment and passion for what you do. You're listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, our clubhouse studios, and it is game day, 1:10. The Guardians and Rays across the street, sold out. And what's the promotion again, Ben? Tell them, my baseball man.
it's the Brett Phillips throwback Devil Rays basketball jersey.
Damn, that's a lot for me to say. That's why I had you articulate that, young man.
Comes in medium or extra large. Those are the two sizes.
You got this broke down? We'll have Birthday Boy on a little bit later on, Brad Richardson. Of course, the voice of Seminole High School sports. Good friend of Mr. Phillips, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But right now we're talking to Rick Vaughn and 100 years of baseball on St. Petersburg waterfront, how the game helped shape the city. So I've got to ask you this, and I'm sure you knew what it was coming. What would be your ideal location for the stadium, in your opinion?
That's a great question. You know, I lived through a lot of that in 20 years over there. You know, I think it would be easy to say Tampa. But, you know, I look at the growth here. You can't go down one city block here without seeing a crane. There's construction. There's growth. People. There's a lot of new people here, which is actually another reason why I wrote the book. I'm assuming there's a lot of baseball fans that have moved here in the last 15 years that have no idea baseball was even played there.
They need to know the history.
Yeah, but I think, actually, I think if we could have put it on the waterfront downtown that Stu tried to do in 2008.
Oh, that was his idea?
Yeah, that was yes.
So you'd have like a McCovey Cove type concept.
I think that would have been.
And Ben and I talked about that. I love that concept.
It would have been hard to put it on a pretty small footprint, and I don't know how parking and egress would have worked, but. You know, given everything I know now, I think if they can do the development project that they are planning on doing here around the Trop, I think it might be in the right place. You know, I think that might be the place that it belongs, knowing what I know now.
Well, I'm being an outsider. I've only been here 6 years now. But I've taken a couple trips. What was the event we went to over in Ybor City?
The Baseball, Bourbon, and Cigars.
Yeah, with the Florida Sports Hall of Fame, my buddy Barry Smith. Well, that day I timed it. I live over on Sunset Beach, Ybor City, and I took Gandhi. It was an easy drive. It only took me 24, 25 minutes. I don't want to see that happen, but it's not the kiss of death.
No.
I want it right here. Ben wants
I
it
definitely
right here.
Want
you
it.
Want it right here. But I just get concerned about the politics of it all, and it's getting to be ridiculous as far as... You know, delivering this proposal, delivering that proposal, and you've seen all that. And I'm sure if you were communications director right now, it'd be a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that is concerning is that we are running out of time. And I think the other thing is, I know everybody, you know, they have a price tag on what it is. Well, we're still a few years away from building it, and here's a news alert. Prices aren't going down. So I think they may, if they say it could be a $1 billion project today, who knows what it's going to be 4 or 5 years from now. Probably not the same and probably not lower. So that kind of worries me a little bit. But you know what? The other thing about it is these things always come down to the deadline. They come down to the very end. Nobody's going to wants to make it. It's all a negotiation. And whether it's the Rays or the city or a developer or whatever, it's going to come down to really where it has to be made, and then it'll and I think it will get done, and I think the Rays will stay here.
One last question, and then we'll finish with the book. What did you think about the split country proposal?
Let's go to the next question, please.
Exactly. I just thought that was the most outrageous thing in the world. The other one isn't a question. What Ben has a question.
Yeah, I got a quick question. So you talked about the success and the reception of Camden Yards. Do you think that the Rays will be able to do something similar to that with the new stadium? Because when I do have friends come down here, they always talk about how it doesn't feel like a baseball stadium. But my issue is you can't have an open-air stadium here in August when it's raining or with the weather. You need at least some kind of an enclosed stadium with air conditioning.
Yeah, there's no question you have to... You have to enclose the stadium. And I know once you start talking about a retractable roof, then the price really goes up. It would be kind of cool, but then you have to think, how many times would you really have it open? I don't know that you would have it open that many times. Again, going back to Camden Yards, the success of Camden Yards, a lot of that had to do with the look of the ballpark. It was Baltimore. You know, I somebody interviewed me a few months ago from the Baltimore Sun because it was the 30th anniversary, and I said, you know what, you could have dropped somebody down in the middle of that field from a helicopter, blindfolded, taken the blindfold off, and they would have looked around for about 5 seconds to go, yeah, this is Baltimore. It just, the steel, the whole concrete, the whole thing was Baltimore, you know.
And now it's become one of the iconic stadiums.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're talking Fenway Park and you're talking Wrigley. There's about 5 decades in between when Camden was built, but I still like that setting and people like the rich tradition. So I agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah, and hopefully they could do something here that would not detract from what we this beautiful area we have, that it would add to it, that it would pick up the characteristics of the city and really be a great compliment to what our city is.
Well, Rick Vaughn, it's been a privilege to meet you and to have you come down. I was ecstatic, actually, when Ferg called me and said you could come down today because the timing's perfect on a baseball Saturday down here to promote your book, 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, How the Game Helped Shape a City by Rick Vaughn, who should know quite a bit about with 4 decades
If I could just say that the book will be available in pretty much all the bookstores here, Barnes & Noble, anybody that sells local books will have it starting next week. But as of right now, if you just go to ArcadiaPublishing.com, you can pre-order it, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Well, not hopefully. If you're a baseball fan, what'd you say, 100? How many Hall of Famers?
193 Hall of Famers.
I thought you said 193.
Yeah. And the crazy thing was 1968, there were 28 future Hall of Famers played on that field in 1 month.
Well, you had the Cardinals. You had the Cardinals down here then.
Yep.
So you had those incredible players. What Tigers were down this area.
Actually, you had the Yankees. The Boston Braves were here first. The Yankees came in. Braves left. Cardinals and Yankees were here forever.
Exactly.
And then when the Yankees left in 61, it was fortunate because they could get out of their lease.
They went to Fort Lauderdale, didn't they?
They did. They got out of their lease, but the only way they could get out of the lease was if they had somebody take their place. And what happened in 1962? Expansion. So the Mets.
New York Mets.
So then you had the Mets and the Cardinals here for a long time. So you had New York media here basically other than the war years, because they didn't do any spring training during the war years, but from 1925 until the Mets left in 87, you had New York media here every spring. It became, that's what I wrote in the book, it really became, it went from this little sleepy fishing village in the 20s to a national media center the first quarter of every year for seven decades.
Well, the rich tradition, and you did a great job of capturing it. I wish you nothing but success. And unfortunately, I now have your phone number, so I'll be blowing you up for commentary quite often.
Love to come down here anytime.
Down.
If you're short, I'll come down here. Don't worry about it.
Well,
I love Ferg. I love the man.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he is taking great care of me, and I'm blessed. I've got an office up in his old office now, but he got tired of running up and down those steps, so that's where I'm at.
I remember that old office.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you.
It's good for a guy, you know, as far as the steps, but using the restroom can be quite a challenge.
I really appreciate it, Mike. Ben, thank you for having me on.
All right, thank you very much. And he is Rick Vaughn. He's got, we're going to talk. Next time we'll talk Madden and we'll talk the whole thing. We got plenty of topics to talk about. Told you, young man, we'd line you up with some baseball conversation.
Yeah, how about that? That was great. The book, super interesting. I look forward to getting my copy of it soon. So,
well, what I do, I'll take care of a little business and then we'll get a hold of, we're going to go to high school.
And, high school sports, all right. It's getting that time of the year. School's about to start
up. Greg Kaiser is the director of the Hillsborough High School football officials, and he's also a doctor. He wears several hats. And I'm going to move. Brad, you'll be over here when Rich moves. Then I've got in fact, that segment was brought to you by Coors Light, by the way.
Oh, all right, Coors Light, nothing better. When those mountains are blue, baby.
How was your trip down up north, buddy?
Not too shabby. You know, it's I certainly did miss old sunny St. Petersburg. And I'll tell you what, the weather down here is a million times better than anything in Statesboro or Savannah, Georgia. You just have that breeze coming. It feels substantially better down here.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Compared to up there, it's blisteringly hot. And the bugs, the Florida mosquitoes have nothing on the gnats in Statesboro, Georgia. They will get you. So I always am happy to come home as often, as frequent as possible.
All right, well, we had a nice conversation talking baseball. Now we're going to talk high school sports. And I met this gentleman at J.C. Newman at the Hillsborough High School Officials and Coaches Gathering the other day. And he's Greg Kaiser, and he's kind enough to join us. How are you, my friend?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Real good. You didn't think I'd put you into action right away, did you? After just a chance meeting last Thursday, you did a superb job breaking down the rules. And let's introduce you to our audience. We're reaching the Tri-County area. Where you're from, where you went to high school, how you got to become a doctor and an official. And do a little bio. How about that?
All right, sounds good. Yeah, I'm born in Tampa, Florida. I went to Plant High School, played with Roland Acosta way back in the days in the 1980s. And then I went off to Furman University, and there they needed intramural officials. So the folks that I was around every time we went to the games knew I knew the rules, and they kept egging me on. But I didn't want to do it because it was the fraternities, and it was not the greatest environment. But then they told me I got paid, and that's what hooked me. So I started doing the games for Furman University. And they had a shortage even back in the 80s. So I got to do some high school games in South Carolina. Then I went on, when I did my medical training, I did games in Middle Tennessee. Then I'm back here in Tampa for the past 25 years officiating with the West Coast. So it's been a lot of fun.
And, you know, the other night, how many years have you been at the helm over there, heading up the officials?
I've been there for about the last 12 years. I've been the vice president of football, but I've actually been with West Coast for now the last 25 years.
Well, I've also surrounded myself with someone that knows the area from a high school perspective over here in Pinellas County, Brad Richardson. He's the voice of Seminole High School sports, and I'll throw him into the conversation from time to time. So introduce yourself, young man.
Hello, hello. How you doing, sir? How's it going today? This is the voice.
Just fine. How you doing?
Oh, hanging in there, hanging there. Nice Saturday here, and can't wait for Rays baseball today and all, just in a little bit, actually, about 15 minutes. So,
well, you know, being a being official, and the other day I was surprised at how the coaches actually warmed up to you guys so much. You couldn't tell the coaches from the officials, because you all seemed like cronies, and I like that camaraderie, but that certainly probably changes once they blow the first whistle a little bit, huh?
For a lot of them it does, but for most they actually understand we're all on the same goal. We're pretty much trying to promote the student athletes and give them the experience that we had when we were student athletes. So most of the coaches are really friendly. It's only those nuances of the rules that get you in trouble.
Speaking of new rules, I want you to try to paint a picture of the rule that you outlined in 2022 that someone catches a pass towards the end of the game, or I guess at any point in the game, before they get tackled, they're out of timeouts, they can throw the ball, is it behind them, out of bounds, and it stops the clock?
That would be correct. That's actually not a new rule. That's a high school rule that's been around forever, but not many people know about it because we're all used to the National Football League and college rules where that's totally illegal. You can't deliberately throw the ball out of bounds to stop the clock. But in high school, they've never closed that loophole. So basically, you could catch a pass or run down the field theoretically and throw the ball backwards out of bounds, and it will stop the clock.
Well, as I said, I was sitting next to a couple of coaches from Tampa Tech, and I said, you fellas better take notes on that, because I assure you that even with you informing some of those coaches, they're not going to remember that. But if you use that at a critical time at the end of the game, there might be an official or two that aren't aware of it, and you'll catch the other team off guard. I think that'd be a brilliant move in a last-second situation.
Yes, people don't know that high school rules are probably some of the most archaic rules. They are the least progressive of all football rules. So the NFL does a lot of crazy things, and they do it in the preseason. And then college usually catches on and follows. But high school is very reluctant to ever change the rules. And that particular rule is on the officials test almost every year because a lot of people wouldn't get it right because they're thinking more Saturday and Sunday football rather than Friday night football.
Well, you know, you were talking about officials, and share with the audience, there's a doctor in front of your name these days, which is kind of unique as someone that's diving in the world of high school officiating, and you're going to be on the Bucs sideline, and you were in radio for a while.
Yes. I've done a lot of things during my life. I went to Furman. They taught that liberal arts education and doing lots of things, and I sort of took it to heart. But I was a cheerleader at Furman, and I was on the mic for the official the cheerleaders. I gave all the cheers over the PA system. And then one of the guys there was having a radio station get reformatted, and he needed people to fill in. So I filled in, and they taught me how to do things. That was way back in the 80s before they had these WAVE and MP3s. And then I got to do essentially a lot of things. And then when I was at home back after I graduated, I had family illnesses, and my sister became a nurse, and that kind of sort of inspired me to become a doctor. So I went to the University of Florida, and I graduated 30 years ago. So this is my 30th anniversary, and I've been back here in Tampa for the last 25 practicing.
Well, and you also have done some Disney voiceovers. I mean, my God, your resume is all over the place, pal.
Yeah, I worked at Busch Gardens for a while. I was on the monorail there, which was live. So you had to say that spiel every single time you went around. And a lot of times, some of us were jokesters. We would change our voice and do different inflections or different imitations. The hard part was you had to keep it up for 13 minutes. So I got a job from Walt Disney because one person that worked there worked in Imagineering at Walt Disney later. So I did some of the things that imitated the voices at Walt Disney, but never character voices, just the informational stuff.
You know, I have a couple of questions on the X's and O's of officiating, especially coming down here from up north. And I mentioned it to all the coaches I met the other night. It's just so blatantly obvious, the incredible speed on every team. Every team has collegiate potential athleticism and especially speed. How do the officials, I know I asked my friends up north, the key is being in the right place to make the right call and knowing where to be. But my God, you know, and not all of you, you're not very old, but some of those guys, and I knew a couple of them, aren't spring chickens by any stretch of the imagination. That's got to be brutal to get yourself in that position. Talk about the strategy there, please.
Yes, they have mechanics, essentially, that try to put us in the right spots so that we have to do the least amount of running so you have the best angle, just like the camera angles like they broadcast on TV, try to give you a great view so you can see things. And we kind of have that same philosophy. But you do have to keep yourself in shape. Like, I'm not a big jogger, but I ride my bike like 20, 25 miles to try to stay in shape. But it is a lot faster than it was. I laughingly say that if I played high school football today, I probably wouldn't make the team from the stuff that we did all those years ago. But we do have guys that pretty much try to keep in shape. But we put the big guys, the umpires, in the middle because they do the least running. And the person that probably does the most running is the back judge because that person has to chase down the balls. But the mechanics that are there for a reason, they try to give us the best opportunity to make the calls.
So my father actually was a high school official for quite some time, Kevin Botham. I don't know if you ever knew him. But it seems like there might be a lack of young people getting into the official game. Is there any people that are the younger audience trying to get into it?
There are a few, thanks to the folks at Intramurals at USF, we have a few younger folks, but you're absolutely correct. The average age of our officials is probably in the mid-50s, which is not really a sustainable thing because in 10, 20 years, there won't be anybody to officiate these games. So we do need desperately younger folks to get involved with officiating and pretty much take our place as the years go by.
Well, it's interesting, too. One of the things, I've never actually been an official for high school sports down on the field. I always, of course, the only person I get close to in the PA booth is going to be the clock operator. But, you know, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that about, you know, a lot of your older officials are the ones who are really doing it. You know, I've also seen this in a lot of rec ball on Saturday. They have to really try to pull officials in to do these games and all that. It's one of the questions I have. Does it boil down to pay? What's been a lot of it? Because that's one thing in Pinellas County. Sometimes a lot of them I've talked to said it's not worth being out there if the pay's not really better.
Yeah, the pay is not really what most of us do it for. Most of us do it for the camaraderie of the game and also just sort of giving back. I certainly don't do it for the pay. They pay my gas money. That's about it. A lot of it is sportsmanship, believe it or not. They did a poll of officials a couple of years ago and asked, like, the older ones, why did they quit? And the number one reason by, like, 65% was poor sportsmanship. So that's been a huge problem. But the pay, we got a huge pay bump last about 3 years ago from the state. So now we're in line with all other southeastern states around the nation.
You know, it's funny, you talked about a little bit about some of the, with high school football, some of the calls and all that are a little archaic. One thing that I've noticed is that a lot of people do not understand how overtime works in high school sports. You know, as we talked about, a lot of them look at the NFL, they see how that's played out on TV, and that's like their guidelines. For all of us that are listening, can you explain how overtime does work in a high school situation?
correct. High school basically gives each team the equal opportunity to have the ball. So when I have to instruct the captains, I always tell them, if you score first, that doesn't mean anything. Don't go running off the field celebrating. Each team gets four downs basically from the 10-yard line. So it's first and goal, second and goal, third and goal, fourth and goal. The only way they can get a first down is by a penalty. So obviously you don't want to do any of those. But we don't never tell them what to do. So if they want to go for a one-point kick in the 10th overtime, that's their decision. So the officiating crew and the rules never tell them what they have to do. But each team basically gets one timeout for each overtime, and they get basically first and goal from the 10-yard line, and they go back and forth and back and forth until somebody outscores somebody else.
All right, so one last thing I got to ask is just some of the weirdest things that you've seen during the game. And I saw this actually this past year. One of the things is that always you're going to have a team that's going to have their own camera in the end zone, just trying to get, you know, plays and run, you know, the offensive line and the D line. One thing I have noticed, and this has been a few teams I've seen, is some of them actually do have drones flying a little higher just past the field goal. Tell me about how that has been possibly a problem, and have you seen a lot of those?
There are a few teams that do have drones, and we think of them like the same ideas like the ESPN or Fox Skycam that goes on the cables. So long as they keep it out of our view, we really don't care. We haven't had any problems, at least in Hillsborough County, with them being down low and being interfering with the play like you saw in the XL League or whatever, that zone that zipped around the field. But the biggie is when you get to the state playoffs, the Florida High School Athletic Association has exclusive contracts with photographers, so then drones become prohibited. They don't want anybody taking pictures other than the people they contract with.
Well, Greg, I certainly appreciate you taking time to join us on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. I look forward to conversations throughout the season, kind of getting your opinion on the progression of how things are going in Hillsborough High School football. I've got Brad over here that'll keep me in the Pinellas County loop of things. But I thoroughly enjoyed meeting you, and I thoroughly enjoyed the event the other night at J.C. Newman. What a great guy Eric Newman is, by the way. Eric, there he is, a titan in the cigar industry, and he officiated for four decades and loves the game.
Absolutely. We enjoyed having him every minute of the time, and I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure.
And another guy I enjoyed was Earl Garcia. He's a hoot.
He's the John McKay of high school football. He's got more one-liners than you could ever imagine. He's a tremendous powerhouse in the Hillsborough County area and a great guy.
Yeah, I just had a conversation with him this morning. He's going to be on next Saturday. Well, you have a great weekend, and I look forward to future conversations. And stay cool in August and September when you guys are out there officiating.
All right, thank you very much. Joy meeting you, and thanks for having me on.
That's Greg Kaiser, and that was an interesting question on the drones. At the high school level?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely one thing I've started to see more and more now is that you'll have some guy that will be standing on either the home side or the visitor side, and they'll have that little remote, and they're flying it up a little bit just where the field goal's at, and they will sit there and do that. Now, the advantage that it serves, as opposed to having a camera behind the goal line, I don't know what the actually better advantage is. It's pretty much the same thing. I mean, I don't know. Unless you're trying to get a more aerial view and looking down, it's hard to say.
All right. Well, is tomorrow your birthday?
No, that's Monday, actually. So
Monday.
Yep. Monday, August 1st.
Brad. Oh, boy. Another year older.
Yeah, I know. Ben, have you been trying to guess my age for the past few days?
Oh, I know your age, Brad.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.